MSW Media. Big shout out today to Helix Sleep. Take their 2-minute sleep quiz and they'll match you to a mattress that will give you the best sleep of your life. Helix is offering 20% off all mattress orders and 2 free pillows for listeners. Go to helixsleep.com/dailybeans and use code HELIXPARTNER20. Hello, and welcome to the Daily Beans for Monday, April 8th, 2024. Today, as Republicans await the rapture during the total solar eclipse, U.S. employers added 303,000 jobs in March. The Republican House Intelligence Committee chair says Russian propaganda has spread through parts of the GOP. Lauren Boebert continues to be mired in controversy after she's cut off by a bartender at a Trump event. And the CIA refutes a GOP whistleblower claim pushed by the House Republicans. I'm Allison Gill.
And I'm Dana Goldberg.
Wow, what an amazing game, my friend.
It was. I mean, we talked about this before. History was made, regardless of what happened. I have a feeling this was probably the most viewed female sporting event in history. We had either Dawn Staley and the Gamecocks getting an undefeated season, or Caitlin Clark in Iowa getting their national championship. So the winner in all of this is women's basketball. Period.
100%.
But congratulations to Dawn Staley. I mean, an undefeated, I think it's the 10th in history. Hasn't happened since, 2016. And she's incredible. She's incredible. And you've got other stuff that she did just yesterday that made news.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about that because a reporter, I think, tried to ask her a gotcha question or to get her social media flooded with terrible people ahead of the big game. But she was asked point blank if she is for allowing trans women to play women's sports. And she handed that guy his ass and said, yeah, yes, if you are a woman or trans woman and you want to play sports, I support that. And then she brought up the fact that, you know, you asking me this question a day or two before one of the biggest games of my life, basically, you know, says more about you than it does me, but I'll take the heat because, you know, basically she's like, I'm paraphrasing. I can't remember exactly what she said, but she's like, I'll take the heat because it's right. It's the right thing.
Yeah. From what I understand, that journalist, if you want to call him that, didn't give a shit about women's sports either. He literally asked the question and I think ended up leaving shortly after the answer. And, you know, on social media and everything else, there's no way he would ask that to a male coach.
No,
he just wouldn't. It was just, it's one of those things that is just infuriating all the way around, and especially before one of the biggest games of her career that did not faze her in the least.
Yeah. And that's bravery. That's grit. And
ally.
Yeah. And that's an ally. Truly incredible response. Truly incredible game. And, you know, like you said, I was rooting for women's sports today. and women's sports was the winner. So wonderful game. Truly one of the best and most intense games I've watched of any sport, male or female. So,
and we're recording this just so y'all know, if you are listening to this right now, the world has not ended. It's the end of the world as we know it, and I feel fine. Supposedly, everyone thinks that the world's ending on 4/8 because there was a 4/8 earthquake in New York or New Jersey, right near Bedminster, the golf course that, you know, Trump's ex-wife is buried. Maybe she was rolling over in her grave. And there was we've got the solar eclipse, the total solar eclipse on 4/8, and everyone thinks the world is ending. So if you're listening to this, congratulations, you have survived the rapture.
Yes, well. Welcome and or congratulations on staying.
maybe I'm just not rapturable. That's possible.
Well, you know, that's okay with me. If that is in fact the case. We're here and we've got the news. Later on in the show, I'll be joined by the founder of Duty to Warn. We're going to talk about the mental fitness of former President Donald Trump, and I think it's an important subject that a lot of media isn't paying attention to, or they're both sidesing it or equating it. They have this normalcy bias that's really just gaslighting us all. So it's a really interesting conversation, and I hope you enjoy it. We have a lot of news to get to today, so let's hit the hot notes. Hot notes. All right, first up from CNN, House Intelligence Committee Chair Mike Turner, this is a Republican, said Sunday that Russian propaganda has absolutely seeped its way into Congress, saying some of his Republican colleagues have repeated false claims on the chamber's floor. Quote, it is absolutely true that we see directly coming from Russia attempts to mask communications that are anti-Ukraine and pro-Russia, some of which we even hear being uttered on the House floor. That's what the Ohio Republican told CNN's Jake Tapper on CNN's State of the Union. Turner's comments come after House Foreign Affairs Chair Michael McCaul told Puck News last week that Russian propaganda has infected a good chunk of the GOP base. Mike Turner, who has been an outspoken advocate of passing additional aid to Ukraine, said Sunday, quote, there are members of Congress today who still incorrectly say that this conflict between Russia and Ukraine is over NATO, which of course it is not. To the extent that this propaganda takes hold, it makes it more difficult for us to really see this is an authoritarian versus democracy battle. That's what he added. Now, the Senate passed a $95.3 billion foreign aid bill that includes assistance to Ukraine and Israel in February, but House Speaker Mike Johnson, whose future as a leader in the party remains uncertain following Marjorie Taylor Greene's move to oust him from the speakership and following Republicans quitting left and right, sticking it to the man, he refused to immediately bring the package to the floor for a vote. And Turner said Sunday he does not believe Johnson is at any risk of being ousted by the chaos caucus, is what he called it, pointing to members, quote, who are seeking attention for themselves and trying to stop all of the important work in Congress, unquote.
Well, I think we can name them. There are several, but they're not hard to pick out. No. This one's from the Associated Press. America's employers, they delivered another outpouring of jobs in March, adding to the sizzling 303,000 workers to their payrolls and bolstering hopes that the economy can vanquish inflation without succumbing to a recession in the face of a high interest rate. Now, last month's job growth was up from a revised 270,000 in February and was far above the 200,000 economists had forecast. By any measure, it amounted to a strong month of hiring, and it reflected the economy's ability to withstand the pressure of high borrowing costs resulting from the Federal Reserve's interest rate hikes. With the nation's consumers continuing to spend, many employers have kept hiring to meet steady customer demand. Friday's report from the Labor Department also showed that the unemployment rate, it dipped to 3.8% from 3.9% in February. That rate has now come in below 4% for 26 straight months. That's the longest such streak since the 1960s, AG.
Wow.
That is a streak. The Fed's policymakers are tracking the state of the economy, the job market, and inflation to determine when to begin cutting interest rates from their multi-decade highs, a move eagerly awaited by Wall Street's traders, businesses, home buyers, and people in need of cars, household appliances, and other major purchases that are typically financed. Rate cuts by the Fed would likely lead over time to lower borrowing rates across the economy. Some economists believe that a rise in productivity, the amount of output that workers produce per hour, that made it easier for companies to hire, do raise pay raises, and post bigger profits without having to raise their prices. In addition, an influx in immigrants into job market is believed to have addressed labor shortages and slowed upper pressure on wage growth. This helped allow inflation to cool even as the economy kept growing.
Oh, wait. So wait. Are you saying that immigrants are responsible for the cooling of inflation?
And they are, and we're feeling the spots. In the meantime, the Fed has signaled that it expects to cut rates three times this year, but it's awaiting more inflation data to gain further confidence that annual price increases are heading toward its 2% target. Some economists have begun to question whether the Fed will need to cut rates anytime soon in light of consistently durable U.S. economy. So things look good.
Yeah, absolutely blistering economy right now. Just amazing. And of course, for some reason, that message isn't getting out. There was a recent study that showed that people are actually giving credit to their governors. Everyone loves their governors, but none to President Biden. 15 million jobs and counting.
Maybe.
All right. From Annie Grayer at CNN, House Republicans leading the impeachment inquiry into Joe Biden were dealt their latest blow this week. When this is going to die, I don't know. This is when the CIA informed them that an allegation that they pushed was a lie. This is the latest example of House Republicans citing questionable information to make a serious claim. Without the evidence or the votes to impeach President Joe Biden, at this point, there's no clear consensus on how or even when to end the Republican-led impeachment inquiry. This latest development comes after the Department of Justice charged a once-trusted FBI informant with lying about the president and his son Hunter Biden's involvement in business dealings, undercutting a major aspect of Republicans' impeachment inquiry into the president. And this is very clear to me, although it may not be clear to CNN in this article, Dana. But Donald Trump has a long history of just say you're investigating, just investigate. You don't actually have to find anything. Mm-hmm. Just do the thing and we'll handle the rest by, you know, basically pointing and saying he's under investigation. I mean, you know, this is why he extorted Zelensky, right? This is what he told the DOJ, Jeffrey Clark, who's about to be fucking disbarred. Yep. Why he said, just say that there's election fraud or we're looking into it and then let the Republicans in Congress and me do the rest. The Republicans in Congress being people like Jim Jordan who are leading up this impeachment inquiry. That's all this is about. Now, House Oversight Chair James Comer and House Judiciary Chair Jim Jordan accused the CIA in a letter last month of intervening in the criminal investigation into Hunter Biden by preventing IRS and DOJ investigators from interviewing a witness in their probe based on information they say came from a whistleblower. But the CIA has refuted that claim in a letter obtained first by CNN that was sent to Jordan and Comer. Quote, without confirming or denying the existence of any associations or communications, CIA did not prevent or seek to prevent IRS or the DOJ from conducting any such interview. The allegation is false. That's CIA Director of Congressional Affairs James Catella in a letter to the Republican committee chairs. House Republicans are pushing back on the refutation. Of course they are. They say the allegation is not false. That's what Judiciary Committee spokesperson Russell Dye told CNN. A Republican House Oversight Committee spokesperson told CNN the same thing. The allegation is not false. The fucking CIA is telling you that it's false. Now, the top Democrat on the House Oversight Committee, Jamie Raskin, said Republicans have not shared where they got the evidence to make this accusation to the CIA in the first place.
Of course, we don't even know where it came from.
Of course. He says, quote, this is a serious charge, but you have completely ignored my staff's request to be allowed to review the information that you say prompted your letter and upon which your letter is putatively and entirely based. That's what Raskin said to Comer on Friday in a letter. The witness who Republicans allege the CIA blocked from being interviewed is Kevin Morris, who serves as Hunter Biden's lawyer and has previously testified that he cooperated with the criminal investigation by turning over documents and speaking with investigators. Republicans have raised questions about why Morris lent the president's son millions of dollars and have sought to connect him to their impeachment inquiry into Biden. Now, Morris has explained the terms of the $6.5 million in loans and said they have nothing to do with the president. Now, meanwhile, even one of the IRS whistleblowers who has claimed the criminal case into the president's son deviated from normal practices also has testified that he met with Morris, quote, very briefly at his residence. He offered to submit an interview. And then he said he wanted his lawyer very early on in that discussion. That's Gary Shapley testifying in December in a closed door hearing with the House Ways and Means Committee about his meeting with Morris. It's just all more bullshit. And it's not going to end. They don't have a way to end it. They don't have evidence to get the votes. They don't have the votes to impeach. So they're just going to kind of keep it open until they fucking lose their gavel.
House, hopefully. Yeah.
And maybe even before the election.
That'd be lovely. Thanks, AG. Last in this section, this one's Melanie Zazzona at CNN. 3 months after Rep. Lauren Boebert apologized for disruptive conduct at a Denver theater, that's an interesting way to put it, the Colorado Republican attended a glitzy Republican gala headlined by former President Donald Trump in Manhattan, where her behavior once again raised eyebrows. At the December soiree, which was the New York Young Republicans Club annual gala, multiple witnesses saw a server tell Boebert they would not bring her any more alcohol. With one witness telling CNN, the server told the congresswoman they believed she had been overserved. Throughout the night, Boebert also kept attempting to snap selfies with Trump, who was sitting at the same table as her. Eventually, Trump's security detail stepped in and asked Boebert to stop, according to witnesses who attended the event and saw the interaction take place. This is just embarrassing for her.
Do you think she was B-barring it? Like, we used to do this. We would go to a bar and then we would go out and have, like, trunk whiskey, like, just take shots.
God, probably disgusting.
We called it the B bar. Let's go to the B bar. It's way cheaper.
That's very funny, actually. Now, well, Donald, by the way, still gave Boebert his full and total endorsement last month, which Boebert's allies say is proof he clearly wasn't very bothered by the incident. They also say her boisterous and loud personality can sometimes be misconstrued, especially by people who don't know her. CNN has reached out to Boebert's office for comment. But as Boebert desperately fights to keep her congressional career alive, the MAGA firebrand will need to dispel concerns about her controversial behavior and accusations of carpetbagging as she tries to convince voters in an entirely new district that she's best suited to represent a rural seat in eastern Colorado, and that is not going well. Her allies, though, insist her congressional reputation will not be defined by her personal life, even if not everyone always agrees with her style.
Style?
Now, this is a very generously written article.
That's a style?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right.
Yep. Boebert's also faced personal challenges, including a recent health issue. The Congresswoman underwent emergency surgery for a blood clot in her leg and has been diagnosed with May-Turner syndrome. Her campaign announced earlier this week. Now, the campaign said Boebert is expected to make a full recovery from all of that. Boebert has been navigating a political roller coaster over the past few months. After narrowly defeating a Democrat last cycle, she opted to run in a more conservative-leaning terrain in Colorado's 4th District, where former Rep. Ken Buck had announced he was retiring instead of seeking re-election to her current seat in the 3rd District. Boebert says the decision to relocate was based on personal reasons, namely wanting a fresh start following a messy and public divorce, and not politically motivated. I call bullshit. Though the move undoubtedly better positioned her re-election chances, or so she thought. Buck threw a wrench into these plans last month when he decided to resign early, teeing up a special election to fill the remainder of his term on June 25th. That's the same day as the Republican primary for the general election this fall, and putting Boebert in an unenviable position. If Boebert had decided to run for the vacant seat, she would have needed to give up her current one, which is a risky decision that would have also further shrunk the House's already razor-thin majority. But if the vacancy committee, which is made up of a panel of Colorado Republicans, had selected one of her primary competitors to fill the seat, it would have given that person a major edge in the primary contest. Boebert ultimately decided not to run for the vacancy, and the gamble seems to have paid off. Last week, the vacancy committee wound up selecting a placeholder candidate. That's Greg Lopez, who is not running this fall at all. The move provided a big and unexpected boost for Boebert, who had sent a letter to the committee before the meeting imploring them not to tip the scales by tapping someone who was also planning to run the primary. Now, it becomes a more even playing field, which Boebert celebrated on social media, probably with a few drinks. But Boebert still has to prevail in the packed primary in June. Nearly a dozen Republican candidates have jumped into the race, though not all of them may appear on the ballot in June, and only half a dozen are considered serious contenders. Sources close to Boebert believe a more crowded field of rivals may actually benefit her by splitting up the rest of the vote. So, man, it's amazing how this woman lands on her feet, because I was hoping this was not going to go in her favor in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah. Now, she came in fifth in the fourth, district in a straw poll, but she may win this. And, you know, if she does, the Republican, whoever wins this primary, is expected to win the seat in the fourth. It's a lot more conservative than the third. But we'll see. We'll see what ends up happening. We'll follow story. Thank you so much. All right, everybody. I have a great interview coming up here with Dr. John Gartner. We're going to talk about the fitness of Trump to hold office, something that the media is failing us on. So stick around. We'll be right back.
After these messages, we'll be right back.
Hey, everybody. Since I made the switch to my Helix mattress, my sleep quality has dramatically improved. So is my daily productivity. No longer am I dealing with sleepless nights, and instead I wake up feeling genuinely rested and ready to tackle my day, and I'm never going back to my old mattress. Just go to helixsleep.com/dailybeans and take their 2-minute sleep quiz, and they'll match you to a customized mattress that will give you the best sleep of your life. And you'll get 20% off all mattress orders and 2 free pillows. Helix has revolutionized the way we think about sleep with its award-winning Lux collection and the introduction of the high-end Elite range, elevating sleep technology to the next level. Helix caters to every type of sleeper with 20 tailor-made mattresses, ensuring there's a perfect fit for everyone from big and tall sleepers to our littlest dreamers. The first step toward achieving your best sleep is as simple as taking the Helix Sleep Quiz. Within 2 minutes, you'll discover the mattress that's tailor-made for you. Plus, with free shipping directly to your door, Helix makes the decision even easier. After I finished taking the Helix Sleep Quiz, I found my match in the Helix Midnight. As a side sleeper who favors a medium firm feel, this mattress has completely transformed my sleep experience. And sleep is like one of my favorite things, so this is really important to me. The thought of returning to my old mattress is unthinkable. Helix's commitment to excellence is evident in their 10 or 15 year warranty and their 100 night in-home trial, offering peace of mind to test your mattress in the comfort of your own home. Helix even has special discounts for first responders, teachers, and students. Helix is offering 20% off all mattress orders and 2 free pillows for our listeners. Go to helixsleep.com/dailybeans and use code HELIXPARTNER20. This is their best offer. With Helix, better sleep starts now. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. I wanted to bring a guest on today to talk about something that I think is missing in the mainstream media, and not necessarily even just missing. I think they know it's there and refuse to talk about it because of their normalcy bias. But we're going to talk today to the founder of Duty to Warn. He founded that in 2017. He's also a former professor at Johns Hopkins University Medical School, a PhD psychologist, John Gartner. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, no, it's great to have you. I really appreciate you coming on because there are so few people who are talking about this. I think it's time that we start amplifying this very important message.
Yes.
About Trump's fitness for office, specifically his mental fitness for office. And, you know, I've talked to people on this show who participated in the Unfit documentary. And I mean, there's so many reasons that Donald Trump is unfit for office. But this one seems to be flying under the radar. And so I'm glad that you're here today.
Yes.
Talk to me a little bit about why this isn't being addressed and like what the Goldwater rule is.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think our message with the Duty to Warn movement was, as you said, that Trump was unfit. But now what we're really seeing is he's actually cognitively incapable, which is actually a much deeper level, if you could imagine, even a deeper level of dysfunction than we had before. And the two are going to interact. But to get back to your question, so one of the reasons that I think professionals have been slow to come forward is because of this Goldwater rule. And as you probably know, most doctors are pretty risk averse. They don't like to get in trouble with their administration or, you know, with the public. But one of the reasons I started a petition for health professionals about Trump's cognitive fitness is because I wanted to create a platform for other professionals to step forward and be able to say that, you know, like in national security, see something, say something. These people were seeing something. As professionals, they were seeing the signs of dementia, but they didn't have a forum in which to say it, to warn the public. And by putting out this petition, I gave them the chance to have that voice. And one of the things, at this point, we have about 500 licensed professionals who have signed. But one of the things I ask people to do is to actually go to our Duty to Warn on Twitter and look at our pinned tweet, because I have a long thread where I've put their verbatim comments on the thread. So you can hear from them what their medical rationale is. You know, one of the things I always say about this is, look, you can say I'm unethical for sharing with the public the signs of Trump's dementia. That doesn't mean I'm inaccurate. They're two different things. And then my second point, if I only have a few minutes to talk, I say, and what if we learn nothing from the Holocaust, it's that being silent is never the more ethical option. There is a huge danger facing this country. And so it's wrong for us as clinicians to see the medical signs of dementia and not warn the public about it. And by the way, the Goldwater rule is actually anachronistic. And the person who will tell you that is the last living member of the ethics committee that wrote the Goldwater rule, who I've interviewed, Helen Day. This was in response to an article in 1965 that was irresponsible, that said psychiatrists say Goldwater is unstable. And this was before the DSM, so they were using Freudian terms, saying he was scarred by his potty training or he was a latent homosexual. And so the APA was embarrassed. And he said, we made the rule because psychiatrists shouldn't make public statements that aren't supported by evidence. Well, in 1980, our field had a revolution. We changed to something called the DSM. And the DSM says that every disorder can be diagnosed by observable criteria, so that 100 clinicians should give you the same diagnosis if they're observing the same behavior. Well, guess what? We have thousands of clinicians, okay, who have been observing thousands of hours of Trump's behavior. We've diagnosed patients, we've committed patients with far less data, believe me. And actually, research shows that clinical interview isn't even the most valid or reliable form of assessment. Actually, observing behavior and informant reports, both of which we have with Trump, is the most reliable method. And so we have the information to at least draw a question. You know, to confirm the diagnosis, yes, any clinician would want to get a brain scan. They might want to do a neuropsychiatric evaluation. But we're seeing enough that our working hypothesis is that he has dementia. And, you know, I hope today we'll get a chance to get into some of those criteria.
Yeah, I would like to talk about that a little bit. Far be it for me. I'm not a professor. I only have a bachelor's in behavioral science. You know, I think we were on the DSM-4 when I went through school. But I want to talk about some of these behaviors, particularly in contrast and juxtaposition to the coverage of Biden's behavior, President Joe Biden, because, you know, as you know, Robert Hur, who was appointed, I don't know why they chose him because he's always been a political beast, but he was appointed to investigate the handling of classified documents by Joe Biden. And in his report, he characterized Joe Biden as a harmless old gent who, you know, didn't have a very good memory and would come across as sympathetic to the to the jury in any case. Although, you know, later in the report, he confirmed that the reason he didn't indict Joe Biden is because he didn't have the evidence of willful retention of classified documents. And in the transcript of the actual interviews that we got, Robert Hur was actually complimenting Biden on his photographic memory, which that, you know, that didn't mysteriously was left out of the report. But we have him, you know, turning around, tripping over a sandbag on stage or falling over on his bicycle in clipless pedals, by the way. And if you've ever ridden clipless, you will fall over no matter how old you are.
I have, and I have fallen.
It will happen.
And
And, you know, we just sort of this normalcy bias from the media telling us that they're both the same. But let's talk about the things that actually separate their two behaviors.
Right.
And let's start with Biden during a press conference where he referred to Assisi as the president of Mexico instead of Egypt. And that's probably because he had Mexico on the mind at that point. How is that different from some of the things we're seeing former President Trump do in public with his speech?
Well, you're right. You know, they have hyper-focused on any little thing like tripping or forgetting a name. And what I say is I really feel like we're being gaslit and exposed to kind of a double lie, where they're pathologizing Biden's normal signs of aging, like forgetting names, which me and all the people my age do, and they're normalizing Trump's gross signs of dementia. And I think part of this is because maybe the corporate media is beholden to a lot of right-wing interests. Right-wing billionaires have been buying up all the media, as you probably know. And part of it, I think, is Trump has actually beaten us down. So in a way, we've habituated to pathological behavior. And so we don't know when we've really passed the point of no return, where this is obviously sick and has to be labeled as sick, as organically sick. But that's why it's important to bring doctors aboard, okay? Because there is still something called objective reality. I know it's fragile, and we're starting to think maybe it doesn't really exist, but it does. And one of the places that it does is in medicine, okay? Where we do have behavioral criteria, and we do have observations, and we do have training and experience, and we do have people who can evaluate those things. So what the petition says is that we think that Trump has probable dementia because he's shown decline and deterioration overall. First of all, you have to show overall decline and deterioration to even consider the diagnosis, and specifically in four areas: memory, language, motor behavior, and regular behavior. You know, he used to be a very articulate man. If you look at interviews of him from the 1980s, he had a rich vocabulary. He spoke not only in complete sentences, in polished paragraphs. Now he can barely complete a sentence. Sometimes he can't complete a word. This is a change. Sharon Begley, who writes for science writer for Stat, actually did a small study where she had a bunch of neuropsychologists evaluate tapes of him speaking in 2018 and then tapes of him speaking in 2015. And they noticed a marked decline, which they thought suggested organic brain damage. Okay, so this is what we're talking about. He now speaks at a, as of 2015, he was speaking at a fourth grade level, according to a Boston Globe study. This is an Ivy League graduate. So again, showing some overall decline. But now let's get to the specifics. Memory, yeah, where they're pillaring Biden because he forgets the name of the president of France, or rather, he calls the current president of France by the old president of France's name. Well, guess what? I call my younger daughter by my older daughter's name all the time, okay? And when you get together with people my age, they laugh about those kinds of memory problems. But of course, the young people are very contemptuous. They think we're losing our stuff if we're forgetting things, that we're somehow incompetent. Like my daughter, who with such contempt when I said, oh, mom tells me you're going on a trip. Dad, I told you that 2 weeks ago. I said, well, now I can be happy about it all over again. So we're focusing on the fact that, yeah, he moves more slowly. He might speak more slowly. He might forget a name or a date. Okay, that doesn't mean that he's incompetent. I feel I'm the best at my job that I've ever been, despite those deficits, because I've also compensated for them with other things like wisdom and judgment. Okay. And those are things that I accumulated over time. I pity the fool that had me as a therapist, you know, 30 years ago. I didn't know anything. You know what I mean? Biden is also very wise, okay? And most cultures revere their elders. We devalue ours. So I think we really need to look at someone like Biden as someone like, yeah, he's aging. I say it's a tale of two brains. You know, Biden's brain is aging. Trump's brain is dementing. Now, with memory with Trump, the Dementia Care Society says a sign of advanced dementia is when you start combining people and combining generations. So when he was talking about Nikki Haley as if she were Nancy Pelosi, this is a classic sign of dementia that you don't see in people who don't have dementia. Okay, when my uncle
taking over the airports during the Civil War,
things disoriented like that. About basic facts, and you know that he said Biden beat recently. He said Biden beat Barack Obama. He didn't. So he's
Trump thinks he's running against Barack Obama.
Well, I was going to get to that. He said it eight times.
But then he says he's kidding.
Okay.
Number
one, he always says he's joking when he feels he finally has to pull something back. Number two, he's never joking. Man never jokes. Right. And third of all, you go back and look at the videotape. He doesn't look in any way as if he's being ironic or joking, nor does he. The other explanation is always talking about the Obama-Biden axis, you know, or collusion or whatever. And no way when he's talking about Obama being president, does he in any way hint that there's some cabal or combination or connection even to Biden? I think what he's doing with Obama is what he did with Pelosi and Haley. I think there's one Joe Obama.
Combining people.
There's somebody named Joe Obama who he hates. He hates that bad Democratic president who humiliated me. Joe Obama, I hate you. Okay, this is what I mean about his brain is turning to mush. Okay, he's look, he also combines generations. He said his father was born in Germany. His grandfather was born in Germany. You know, when my Uncle Bruce was in the nursing home, he started saying that I was a lawyer because my dad was a lawyer. Okay, but he was someone who could no longer care for himself. That's how advanced his dementia was. So I'm saying when Trump is showing these kinds of signs, these are serious. Michael Wolff, who shadowed him to write his authorized book, said that he frequently didn't recognize people that he'd known for years. Not didn't remember their names, okay? Didn't recognize them. Okay, again,
well,
if you've ever
in
had...
in his deposition for the E. Jean Carroll case, he looked at a photo of Marla Maples, his wife, and said that it was E. Jean, or said that a photo of E. Jean Carroll was Marla Maples.
Exactly.
See, I just got some names wrong. But
you see, and you're still competent.
Reverse. Well, I can come back to it and catch it and say. But let's talk also a little bit about not just mixing up humans and combining them and mixing up generations, but the slurred speech.
Yes.
Now we know, yes, obviously Joe Biden has has overcome a stutter and a stammer, and I think has done an incredible job.
Yes.
With that. There's a lot of bravery involved there, but we frequently see him, Donald Trump now saying United States or like just making an SH sound out of a lot of different words. or that moment when he was talking about Syria and Saudi Arabia and just froze and went, and like his eyes went blank. Yes. And then it's almost like he woke up and was like,
yes,
oh, I'm giving a speech, and then just continued on.
Yes.
He just seemed to check out for a minute. So there's that.
Yes.
And then we also have the almost seeming mania of two different people. You know, I used to watch this comedian named Mitch Hedberg, and for a while he was on heroin, and then for a while he was doing a lot of cocaine. And you could tell what era of drug use he was in by the way that he would, you know, do his comedy. Now, that's from a non-zero net force, an outside thing. But when you have something where it maybe occurs because of a sickness, because of a deficiency in the brain, that is also, I think, a catalyst for this kind of stuff. Now, we do have to take a quick break, but when we get back, can we talk about some of those moments?
Yeah.
All right, everybody, welcome back. Just before the break, you and I were discussing one of the symptoms of Trump's decline, the one where he stops words in the middle of saying them or goes blank or trails off with a the United States or that type of thing.
We have a name for this symptom. It's called phonemic aphasia, and Trump is doing it with increasing frequency. It's using a fragment of a word. It's not a word. It's a non-word, but it has a fragment of the word you're trying to say. And it's, again, something that's very typical of people with dementia, and people who don't have dementia don't show this symptom. And you mentioned a bunch of examples, you know, saying missus instead of missiles. It's, Christmas instead of Christmas. You know, actually, The Daily Show and Ron Filipowski, you know, have supercuts where you can see like 30 of these examples in a row in my piece that you guys read. I put them all on a single space page just to show you the range of them. Space capsule for space path, space capsule, you know, renoverse for renovations, conducting for conducting. I mean, it just goes on and on. One of them, by the way, made in his State of the Union to sanctuary instead of sanctuary. But
right.
The thing is that some people have argued, well, it's just an articulation problem. Maybe his dentures are loose, or maybe he's toxic on some drug. Well, he also makes these mistakes in writing. Okay, so that means that it's a brain problem. It's not an articulation problem. You know, recently he just, put on Truth Social, Joe Budden, B-U-D-E-N, disinformates and misinformates, all caps. Well, those aren't words. Okay, so he does it in writing as well as orally. So the point is, it's not an articulation problem. It's a brain problem. He shows semantic aphasias, which is to use a real English word, but not according to its meaning, like the oranges of the investigation. You know, he's shown us a lot of recent examples of that. And as you say, now he's deteriorating to the point where sometimes he's not even using words. He's just using sounds. Like he said, gang, boom. I hear bing. That's an actual quote, you know, or as you said, in that moment where his demeanor changes, he goes utterly blank and he was simply speechless altogether. So we're seeing this kind of degeneration, and he's occupying a different reality. When he thinks that different people are president than are. And so anyway, you put all that together. And I forgot to mention an important part, his tangential speech, where he goes on these rants where journalists are starting to call them incomprehensible. I'm glad. Before they were calling them rambling. Okay. You know, rambling, I say rambling is when you've like smoked too much pot and you forgot why you're in the middle of a story. That's rambling. You know, this is nonsensical. No one can understand what it means. It's incoherent. That's a sign of a serious brain problem. And I have tons of examples, but I'm going to give you the most recent one. Okay. He was this week in front of a New York courtroom. So he said, we can't have an election in the middle of a political season. We just had Super Tuesday and we had a Tuesday after Tuesday already.
Right. Yeah, this no, man. I he lost me. And I will say, you know, I've been covering Donald Trump and politics for a while now. And back in the day, 2016, 2017, he would go on these interesting rants. But I was usually able to sort of understand what he was getting at.
Uh-huh,
I could put it together.
Right, right.
But more recently, I haven't been able to put these together. I haven't been able to. It's more like, what is he trying to say?
Right,
usually,
right.
I can figure out what he's getting at. Like when he talks about the windmills and birds and stuff like that. I'm like, okay, I think what he's saying is that birds will be struck by these blades of these windmills and it's very dangerous to birds. I think that's what he's trying to say. Or that Puerto Rico, as an island, is more susceptible to things like water damage. I think that's what he's getting at. But now it's gotten to a point where I can't put it together.
Well, and that's because dementia is a deteriorating illness. And I always say to people, look at Donald Trump right now, because that's the best Donald Trump you're ever going to see. You know, when we were noticing decline in his, you know, his mentation that we were writing about in 2018, you know, we were comparing tapes from the 1980s, right, to 2015. Now people are saying, who have visited Trump, people who are in the Trump administration, he's not the same man he was 4 years ago. And that's because the nature of the illness is not only does it deteriorate and only go one way, downhill, but the rate of deterioration begins to accelerate. And so that's
what we're
saying,
ask
a rock
that.
Rolling downhill, picking up speed. And eventually,
it seemed
if he's like other patients,
exponential.
It's
me.
Exponential, exactly. And so, you know, if we're trying to estimate, can this person, never mind his being evil and fascist and Russian and criminal and everything else, can this person actually cognitively be able to function through a four-year term? And I think the answer is no. If you do the math, you know what I mean? Look at the rate. And see, I was bad at physics and calculus, but it's almost like a calculus. You have to, we're charting the rate of acceleration of speed, not just the rate of speed.
Oh, yeah, it's an asymptote. It's increasing right. At an exponential rate.
It's increasing at an exponential rate. And I'm glad you mentioned asymptote, because what we're asymptotically approaching is something they call the cognitive cliff, which is at a certain point, you're not just rolling downhill, you have fallen off the cliff. It's very sudden and it's very extreme. And that's the time when, you know, we bring grandma to, you know, seriously, to a living situation where she can be taken care of, because now she's not in reality, she's gone. I mean, she really needs help. I'm saying he's going to fall off that cliff. If he is reelected, you know, I'm not trying to be like a smartass and say he may be fine wandering the White House lawn in his pajamas, confused about where he is. You know, my colleague at Cornell University, Harry Siegel, gave an interview where he said he notices that Trump makes these errors mostly in the evening and he thinks he's sundowning.
Mm-hmm. Right, which means you get worse as the day goes on. Yeah.
Right. So there may be parts of the day when Trump is president where he's, you know, carrying the nuclear football around. He might accidentally nuke France instead of forget the name of the president of France, you know?
Right. And you know, we do understand that. I mean, I think we put too much stock in the president and his role. I think I think it shouldn't be as important as we've all made it out to be, and as time goes on in these past decades, because it's an administration really that runs the country and not just one person. But in Trump's case, if he wants to you know, retake the White House, it would just be him making all of the decisions. But I really appreciate that you're bringing this to light, because I don't think enough people are talking about it. I think the media is failing us in their
yes,
not only their both
so.
Sidesism, but their horse race type coverage. They're covering elections like it's 1980, and we're in a very different time period right now.
And both sidism is a good way of putting it. This two old men narrative is another misleading narrative. You know, we're comparing apples to rotted oranges here.
Well, right. We have to think about the explanations. You know, I was talking about when Robert Herr's report came out and said they couldn't remember the year Beau Biden died, that actually ended up being incorrect. But, you know, I lost my father when I was very young, and I remember the month and the day, but I can't remember the year. It's either 90 or 91. I can't even put it in context. It could have been before my trip to Germany or after my trip to Germany. You know, I think our minds are, you know, PTSD helps our brains survive by sort of blocking those things out. And so there are explanations for these things. With Trump, there's only one explanation.
Right, right.
So I think that's an important way to look at it. So I'm glad that you got all of these signatures. Tell everybody where they can find this information, where they can learn more about this.
Sure. If you want to look at the petition, you go to change.org. It's our diagnostic impression of Trump is probable dementia. And again, if you go to Duty to Warn, I'd really like you to hear the doctors and the nurses and the psychologists. I'd like you to hear their voices. Some of them took a lot of time to really write very detailed clinical assessments of Trump. One of them looks like it's a neuropsychological report from Dr. Elizabeth Zoffman, who's a dementia specialist. and who's starting to give interviews herself now, which I'm really glad about. So if you do nothing else, just read what the doctors have to say. They're not political operatives like Robert Herr.
Right. And just two more quick questions. I only have a couple minutes here. Trump always talks about the fact that he was given a mental acuity test. That, to me, that test, I don't think that's given to everyone. I think that's given to people who need to take it. Right. And I wanted you as a doctor to comment on that. And then the other thing I wanted you to comment on very quickly is the motor skills. We've got a lot of right arm and right leg dragging and grabbing the water with two hands. Do motor skills go hand in hand with dementia, or are they a separate situation?
I'm glad you brought that up. We didn't get to cover that. Elizabeth Zoffman, who's a dementia expert, is someone who's pointed out that he has something called a wide-based gait. If you look at films of him, it doesn't always show, but sometimes it's very blatant, where it's like he's swinging his right leg like it's a dead weight in kind of a semicircular motion. That's a very specific type of neurodegeneration that's specific to dementia. Other people have pointed out that he has. So again, that's like a telltale sign that I didn't know about, you know, because I'm not a super specialist. It took us a dementia expert to point that out to me. And the other thing is that, as some dementia experts point out, he has kind of a way he leans forward in sort of an awkward way, sort of leaning forward. That's actually been on the internet a lot, but that is a stance that people make. You had one other question. I forgot what it was. You see, because I'm Joe Biden.
The mental acuity test.
Oh, yes. Well,
when is
actually,
that administered?
Believe it or not, it's only administered if you think someone has dementia and you want to.
Okay.
Yes,
thank you.
Exactly.
Because, I talked to my mom and my stepdad, both aging.
Yeah.
And, you know, both getting up there, one is showing some signs of, forgetfulness beyond a typical aging brain. And they have not been administered this test. They're not at the point yet where a doctor sees fit to administer this test.
Yeah. First of all, the MoCA, you have to actually have very advanced dementia to fail the MoCA, to be honest. It's sort of pinned to a kindergarten level. I mean, it has questions like, here's a picture of four animals. Can you show me the lion? So when Trump brags about acing the MoCA, what was he? He was just so good at picking out the lion. I mean, he was just so good at picking out the lion that he was incredible. I mean, this is a test that every kindergartner can pass.
Right, but do you think he was administered this test because there were medical professionals that thought there might be an issue? Or do you think that he asked for a test he could pass
I know the history because I organized a group of mental health professionals to send a letter to Ronnie Jackson demanding that they give him a cognitive screening because of the signs of dementia that he was showing. And at that time, I was working with Tom Steyer, who had a PR group, and they sent that op-ed to everyone. And suddenly it became a big story. Doctors are demanding that Trump take a cognitive screening. So they did it. We kind of dared them to do it, and then they did it. But then he just keeps talking about it like he passed the Mensa exam. I'm not a kindergartner dementia screening exam.
I see. Okay. So he was kind of pushed into taking
the MoCA. Absolutely.
All right. Well, good job. Good job. I appreciate that. Of course, we won't see the actual results.
Of course.
We only hear about
man,
the
person, woman,
imagined results. Right.
Which aren't even on the test.
Well, yeah, right. That's a different thing. Thank you so much for taking the time to explain all this to me, because I've been very curious about it from a medical perspective. You know, I only have the bachelor's, so I'm glad that you were able to come on and share this with us, and I encourage everybody to follow you on social media, go to Duty to Warn, go to change.org to look at this petition, and we'll catch up again, because as you said, and as I've noticed, that it seems to be getting exponentially worse. It's on an asymptotic trajectory.
Right.
We'll check back in a
Good.
Few months to see where this
Good.
Is.
Good.
And I look forward to
and
that.
And I make a prediction. He'll be worse.
Yeah, he definitely will be worse, and he'll have less money. That's going to be the, I think those two things are going to be directly correlated, although completely not causal. But I do appreciate your time. Thank you so much, everybody.
Sure.
John Gartner. We'll be right back with the good news. Everybody, welcome back. It's time for the good news.
Who likes good news, everyone? Then good news, everyone.
Na, 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 na. Good news, good news. And if you have any good news, confessions, corrections, you want to play What the Fark is in your arc, just send us a picture or a drawing of any animal and we will just try to guess what it is. Or maybe if we can't, we'll just name it. We'll just give the animal a name.
I think that would be really fun, something we could
be good at. If you have a dissertation title or a thesis title, those are so fantastic. We'd love to hear your stories about student debt relief. Send those into us. I forward those on to the White House. And in fact, any program set up by Democrats that has helped you and your family or someone that you know, we would love to hear about that as well. Also, if you have a shout out to a loved one or a self shout out, those are fantastic. I love self shout outs. They're so important right now. We always need to remind ourselves about how rad we are. And if you have no pod pet tax to pay, you can send us an adoptable pet in your area and we'll try to find a home for that baby.
Oh, yeah.
Anything at all. Send it to us at dailybeanspod.com and click on contact. First up from JoJo, pronouns she and her. Good morning, Beanie Queenies. I adore the show. Love you guys. Love this way. You have this way of presenting the news and finally saying fuck at the end. It's pretty cathartic. Anyway, longtime listener, I just wanted to let you guys know something. Every time someone mentions the total eclipse on April 8th, 2024, that's my birthday. It makes my little heart skip a beat when someone mentions my day.
No.
Though it's been my day my whole life. And only now are people getting the idea. I also just happen to live in the Dallas-Fort Worth area and will be in the path of totality. This is quite exciting because not only is it my birthday present from the cosmos, but it's my 30th birthday.
Nice.
I keep telling people, if I ever get superpowers, a round-numbered birthday on the day of such a cool cosmic event, this would be it. And bonus coolness, it's also my partner Scott's birthday. Wow.
Wow.
JoJo, this is like the universe is lining up for you. Yep, we share a birthday and a house and food and clothes and soap, etc. And while he will not be 30 like me, 33 is fine too, right?
That's Jesus's birthday. It's the resurrection.
Yeah. Yep, you beat Jesus. Scott is one of the silliest, kindest people I know and is best at early morning pre-work cuddling. Awesome.
Aww.
He makes me laugh daily. And every year our birthdays, we get into, no, it's my birthday shouting fits that usually end with us laughing and hug dancing. I love my dude, even if he claims the 8th was his first. Thanks for your time and what you guys do. I hope you take care of yourselves, but I know your crew and your loved ones do. So best wishes from a blue dot in an almost blue state. Go Colin Allred.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Go Colin Allred indeed. He's doing well in the polls. All right, yep. This is from Irene, pronouns she and her. Hi, Allison and Dana. This is just to say, in reference to the, quote, cats are afraid of bananas and cucumbers comment on today's Beans, that this is not an idea you want to endorse, or spread. Cats are not afraid of fruit. Cats, like a whole host of animals, have an instinctive fight or flight response to snakes.
Yes.
When you see something out of the corner of your eye that at first glance looks like you're being attacked, jumping out of your skin is a normal reaction. I agree. There's a trend of making funny videos where people place a cucumber or banana near a cat while the cat is doing something they think is safe, like eating her, for instance. And when the cat gets a glimpse of the fruit, they freak out. It's a cruel practice because it makes cats start to doubt their safety where they should feel completely at ease. Mm-hmm. Please don't promote this idea. I will absolutely not. I saw one of those videos, Irene, and thank you so much for correcting all of this. For pod pet tax, here are Swan and Lulu. You're free to guess what type of animal they are. Hint, they're definitely not afraid of fruit.
Yes, that's such a good point, Irene. I don't endorse putting a cucumber or scaring your cat like that at all. And I don't like videos that do that. I also, Dana recently saw a video where somebody made a little, like, I guess, cutout in a fish tank so that the cat can get up in there and look at the fish. I think that's not a good idea for the fish. Like, why? You know, I'm with you on that, Irene. Thank you for that. And look at these beautiful babies. Look. So adorable. Thank you for that. Next up, N. Lee, pronouns she and they. Good day to you both. I'm a news junkie and a court nerd, but I only really got into podcasts about a year ago. I quickly found Daily Beans, then AG's other podcasts. They are essential listening and have become my new healthy addiction. Thank you so much. Thank you. Anyway, here's my story and my good news. When I turned 30, I had a bit of a crisis about what the rest of my life was going to look like. My wife and I were getting serious about having kids, and I figured I needed to be something more financially secure than a starving artist. I retired the comic strip I'd been doing for 10 years and put down my pencil. Before I knew it, 33 years had gone by.
Wow.
I didn't intend for it to be so long, but you know, life. Shortly before COVID, with my kids both recently graduating from high school, a friend persuaded me to start drawing again. And for the first time, I dabbled with pastel. Today, while I'm still a cashier, so much for being financially secure, I'm proud to say that I'm also once again an artist, specifically a portraitist.
Good.
While I do commissions of both pets and people, I'm also pursuing my own personal art project. In a landscape dense with villains, we really need our heroes, and I've dedicated myself to drawing them. I've included some of my drawings of Jack Smith and Opal Lee. For my pet tax, I've included drawings of my two, nah, you'd never guess the breed, American dingoes, my big guy Lucas, and my now gone but forever loved Libby with my son.
Wow, look at these.
Yeah, we have a link to the to their Insta in the show notes. And it's N Lee, L-E-I-G-H, D as in David, Arts. N Lee D Arts.
Oh, these are incredible. Thank you so much for sharing this. I'm so glad you picked this the pencils, pastels, everything back up. You are incredibly talented.
Yeah, like first of all, that's like one of the best portraits of Jack Smith I've seen. The Opal Lee is incredible. The dog's expressions are what's getting me. How you've been able to capture, you know, like especially with that husky type dog, like giving you the what the fuck look, like the huh? It's incredible, your ability to capture this stuff. Wonderful. I'm so glad.
Yeah, these are amazing. Thank you. Thank you. All right. This is from anonymous pronoun she and her. I'd like to introduce this extremely friendly and adoptable cat in hopes that someone not too far away once welcome her into their family. She showed up the other day at the property in rural western Kentucky, where I am staying temporarily. There are several feral cats on the property, and I and the owners all have cats of our own, and their dog has already tried to attack her. This pretty girl, however, is determined to adopt someone as soon as possible. I've considered adopting her for myself, but I will be moving soon, and my financial situation is so precarious that I don't want to jeopardize my chances of finding a suitable apartment by adding another cat to the mix. I'm within accessible driving distance of Nashville, St. Louis, Owensboro, Kentucky, Clarksville, Tennessee, and Chicago. In particular, anyone traveling to the Paducah, Kentucky area to see the eclipse on April 8th will be in the vicinity. Oh. If you're coming for the totality, please consider going home with a cat. I discovered the beans this winter and continue to be glad I did. The two of you have helped keep me sane during a very challenging and lonely time. Thanks for everything you do. And if for some reason you are going to be in the area and you are interested in this really beautiful cat, you can email us at hello@mullershewrote.com and we'll get you in contact with this Eclipse Kitty.
Yeah, put that in the subject line, Eclipse Kitty, so that we can connect you easily. Ah, oh, she's beautiful.
She really is.
I want her. I'm not going to be anywhere near the Paducah, Kentucky area, but anybody who's going to be, let us know. hello@mullershewrote.com. Put Eclipse Kitty in the subject line and we'll connect you. Thank you for that. Next up from Colleen and Mandy, pronouns she and her. We're sisters doing a podcast. This is our first ever venture together. We started our pod in October and have over 2,500 listens, although it's only like 25 per episode, but we're trying. If there are any hockey fans out there, you can shout out our Vegas Hockey Girls podcast. Thank you so much. We talk about all things Vegas hockey in 15 minutes or less. And there are so many pods on this topic, but none that just give the facts we were yearning for. So we decided to do it ourselves. Thanks, Beans Queens. Here's a what the mutt for you. She weighs 60 pounds. Oh, look at this dog. Okay, first of all, Colleen and Mandy, congrats on your podcast. It's called Vegas Hockey Girls Podcast. I love women doing sports podcasts. So absolutely fantastic. Everybody check it out. Give it a listen. And I'm so glad you're like, they weren't doing it the way I wanted. So we did it they did it ourselves. That's how Muller She Wrote started. So congratulations. All right, what do you think of this dog? I think Akita.
Yeah.
In
you
there,
think,
maybe?
For sure. Maybe Boxer?
Maybe German Shepherd dog. Chow Chow, of course.
Got long legs like a Great Dane.
Yeah, long, long legs. All right, let's see what we got here. Oh, look at that sweet baby.
Pibble,
probably too. Okay, I don't really know, but I'm curious what you think. I was told Border Collie Plot Hound Lab.
Huh.
And Kanai, our producer, said, I'd be surprised if there wasn't Akita in there. And I agree with our producer.
Same.
Same. If you do a doggy DNA, let us know, Colleen and Mandy, and we'll go from there.
All right. Up next, we have Anonymous, pronoun she and her. Hello, Leguminati, and a special shout out to my fellow lesbians. I coach a women's college varsity team, and a few years ago, one of my athletes began to medically transition to affirm his gender. It was really tough not to have him be able to compete anymore because we don't have a men's equivalent team. But we found a way to keep him a member of our team and connected with the sport he loves. Today, he had to miss practice for the best reasons ever. He was at the local courthouse getting his name officially changed. We're all so proud of you and congratulations. For pet tax, here's my roommate, Lila. She was rescued from a Walmart parking lot when she was about one, and we think she's about 10 now. She's the fastest 17-pound dog you've ever seen. Loves digging, fetch, chasing squirrels, hunting flies, and watching the world go by out the window. Want to guess her mix? She's never been tested, so I guess you can't be wrong. She's adorable. And it's a terrier bat. She's a terrier and half bat. With those ears.
It's Bride of Frankenstein.
Those are good. This dog is so cute.
I love this dog. Oh, the fur, the hair, the gray tuft on the top of the head with the eyebrows. It's fantastic.
That's what my hair looks like now.
Thank you for that, Anonymous. Next up, and finally from Anonymous, no pronouns given. You asked for ER nurses stories. Uh-oh.
Oh, yes.
I'm not a nurse, but I was a pre-med student at the Ohio State University volunteering in the ER in the 90s. We had one room that had a bed, but less life-saving equipment than the other rooms. We would usually never use it because we had so many state-of-the-art rooms. This room had an entire wall of supply cabinets. Whenever someone came in with an object stuck in their ass, they would be put in this room. Because of the supplies, everyone on staff had an excuse to enter just to get some tongue depressors or whatever excuse to get an earful of the rattling and buzzing of a poorly designed vibrator stuck in a patient's ass. If you think this ER space allocation is problematic, please know we had a smaller patient room that was almost never used for patients, and it was designated the fart room, where we could ease the pressure without leaving to go to the restroom.
That's amazing. It is amazing how many people, and listen, I imagine to some people it feels really nice, but how many people stick foreign objects up their butt and get them stuck and get them in the ER?
The peach with the leaf killed me.
And oh, yeah.
I mean, the fact that they put it in this room in with the supplies so that people have an excuse.
It's so good. Excuse me. Yep. Excuse me. Just got to pick up some tongue depressors. This poor person's ass is in the air probably because they can't lie on their back. So they're probably face down on a table with their...
I shouldn't laugh at people who need medical help.
Oh, man.
Seriously, if you have an issue, please take yourself to the ER. But wow, the fart room. The fart room, I think, is probably the best part of this whole thing.
Right. And like I said, I'm not slamming this. Some people think it feels really good. Just don't use something that's going to get stuck.
Right. Don't be dangerous. But, you know, take care of yourself, as I say, in the sign off.
Yeah. However you need to do it to release the pressure.
Safely. Take care of yourself safely.
Please.
All right. That is our show for today. Thank you so much, everybody, for sending in your good news. You can send it to us at dailybeanspod.com and click on contact. Dana, do you have any final thoughts for today?
I don't think I should say anything else. Please do a sign off.
I just wanted my final thought to be that congratulations to women's sports, women's basketball,
yes.
and Dawn Staley. Just truly
Absolutely.
Incredible today.
Go Gamecocks, and Caitlin Clark is going to be a powerhouse in... Oh, WNBA draft, by the way, is, I believe, April 15th? No, 16th? Now
it's coming
I'm not
up soon.
Sure. Yeah, it's coming up around tax time and when the Stormy Daniels case starts. So yeah. There you go. Lots of joy.
Exactly. We've got that. We've got the April 22nd hearing on the fact that he can't make his bond because Mr. Hankey apparently doesn't have the cash. We have the April 25th Supreme Court oral argument about his ridiculous immunity claims. I mean, all sorts of things happening in April and the WNBA draft. So
thank
you. Thank you very much, everybody. We'll be back in your ears tomorrow. Until then, please take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. Take care of the planet. Take care of your mental health. Take care of your family. Vote blue over Q.
And take all your family with you.
I've been AG.
And I've been DG.
And them's the Beans. The Daily Beans is written and executive produced by Allison Gill, with additional research and reporting by Dana Goldberg. Sound design and editing is by Desiree McFarlane.
with art and web design by Joel Reeder with Moxie Design Studios. Music for The Daily Beans is written and performed by They Might Be Giants, and the show is a proud member of the MSW Media Network, a collection of creator-owned podcasts dedicated to news, politics, and justice. For more information, please visit mswmedia.com.
MSW Media.
Hi, this is John Cryer, and I am hosting a new 7-part true crime podcast called Lawyers, Guns, and Money that'll challenge everything you think you know about U.S. covert operations and presidential misconduct. From Jack Bryan, the director of American PSYOP, comes the incredible true story of John Mattis, a newly sworn-in Miami public defender in the 1980s who has found himself completely in over his head.
I step off the plane, and there is a van with a couple guys with Uzis. And one of them in broken English said, "Welcome to Bogota, John."
Mattis's first felony defendant has been arrested for having a machine gun and tells Mattis a dangerous secret.
He was shipping arms into Central America on behalf of the CIA. As a first-time lawyer, I want to act like I know what I'm doing.
But with the help of a Colombian drug smuggler...
How much money the CIA raised by hitting up drug dealers?
A lot of money, millions of dollars.
An Alabama mercenary...
They were prepared to die to the last man. I saw this in them. I saw the fire in their eyes. And they made me their war chief.
And a newly elected senator, John Kerry.
We are looking at allegations of drug running, gun smuggling, conspiracy to commit murder and murder itself.
He'll fight to free his client.
The judge said, "Show me in a courtroom how we were at war."
Expose an illegal war being run by the White House.
I mean, I wanted him involved, but I didn't want to be on record as doing it.
And somehow stay alive in the process.
I just escaped a kidnapping by the CIA in Costa Rica.
This is Lawyers, Guns, and Money.
So you have a man in an Armani suit standing on the bow of a boat with a rocket launcher and says, "If I lose sight of you, I will launch. You will be vaporized."
Available everywhere starting October 29th, or get it ad-free and early starting October 22nd at lawyersgunsandmoney.supercast.com. There you'll find bonus episodes along with exclusive content. Subscribe now.